Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I'm going to make an assumption here for a moment. I'm going to assume that virtually everyone, and by virtually everyone, I mean like 90-something percent of this audience, would probably agree with this statement. Recruiting is the lifeblood of college football. I mean, if you're watching Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharp on a regular basis, if you're listening to our program on a regular basis, just based on the general conversation that we have around here, I'm pretty sure you're on board with that statement, that the single most important component for success is how well you recruit. It's not the only thing that matters, but it is the single most important component to all of that. Now, in addition to that, there's something else that's really true about recruiting. Recruiting is also really good entertainment. Ultimately, the thing that matters most is how you win games on the field. But if you're going to judge on a daily basis, and by daily I mean 365 days a year, take it from someone who shows up 52 weeks out of the year to do this show. If you're going to judge it on kind of a daily entertainment basis, recruiting provides more bang for a buck over the course of a year than the actual on-season stuff does, or in-season stuff does, because obviously the season is contained to September, October, November. You hope deep into December, into January, but that's still like a portion of the year, whereas recruiting is really kind of a 12-month thing, and they're twisted. Turns, there's always crazy drama, and it's just all really fun. So in addition to being the lifeblood of the sport, it is also kind of a soap opera that you can kind of tune into and follow every single day. But there's a weird thing that you see happen at a place like Georgia. Georgia's not the only place where this is true, but it's probably the only place that we care about in which this is true. The more efficient, and this is an opinion by the way, the more efficient you get as a recruiting power, the less recruiting drama you kind of have, and that's really good for Georgia. It just gets really efficient at bringing in the players it wants to bring in. But the byproduct is the entertainment value of watching Georgia go about its business kind of goes down. It's sort of the slow, methodical way that one of these big box retailers kind of takes over the retail segment or something like that. It's very efficient. It's growing at a rapid pace. But it's not probably quite as entertaining as some of the other recruiting stuff that you may see going on at other places, or maybe as entertaining as some of the stuff that you saw at Georgia when everything, you know, kind of got going under Kirby Smart. I'll give you, the most recent example of that. Georgia got a 2022 commitment yesterday from Marquise Groves-Killebrew. Now, this is the kind of player that you want in any recruiting cycle. He is almost for sure, I mean, he's already kind of a top 100 type cornerback, is almost for sure going to be that way when his senior year gets going. This is a guy that has ties to other elite defensive backs for the class of 2021. Jeff Sintel explained that before the Hedges presented by Kroger last night. There's never going to be a year in which Georgia doesn't want a commitment from a guy like Marquise Groves-Killebrew. The fact that he currently goes to Brookwood, most recently going to Grayson High School, also makes it more interesting as well because of some of the stuff that Connor Riley has written about at DogNation.com recently in terms of Georgia, what it hasn't done or has done when it comes to recruiting Metro Atlanta prospects, including guys from Gwinnett County. By the way, we'll talk to Connor about that more on our show coming up in just a moment. But the point is, there will never be a year in which a guy like MGK, I think he's enjoys being called, will not be someone you want at Georgia, and yet the way in which Georgia goes out and gets him a year early, a year in advance, while the rest of college football is seemingly scrambling to get 2021 commits, Georgia's going out there and knocking down a big-time 2022, very little fanfare, not a lot of preview for this. It just kind of dropped out of the sky. You look at the specs and the player and you say, oh yeah, that's exactly who Georgia recruits. This is exactly who you want. It's good for Georgia, but it's kind of drama-free in a lot of ways. By the way, before I finish my point on this, let me let you hear Jeff Sintel from last night on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger talking about exactly what MGK brings to the table and why he was on Georgia's radar kind of a year earlier than maybe some of the other prospects that you're talking about the most right now. Here's Jeff on Killebrew.
Marquise Groves-Killebrew. He's now at Brookwood High School. He transferred from Grayson High School very recently. He's already an All-American Bowl commitment. And I was swapping some messages this evening with Tony Ballard, who runs the very successful and very, very prestigious Hustle Inc. 7-on-7 team. He told me that the young man is very hungry to be great. He said that, I guess the main takeaway from the conversation was that Marquise Groves-Killebrew, MGK, is the first freshman starter on their travel team ever.
So you're talking about a defensive back good enough to start for an elite 7-on-7 team as a freshman. This is obviously a player that Georgia wants, and yet the recruitment of a guy like MGK is mostly drama-free. I'd say the Chaz Chambliss stuff is kind of the same way. We saw Chambliss make his pledge the day before to Georgia out of Carrollton. Big, physical, strong outside linebacker. Carrollton, one of the top programs in the state. There are going to be very few recruiting cycles where a player like Chaz Chambliss isn't an automatic take for a program like Georgia. Georgia targeted him. Chambliss liked Georgia, and it just kind of worked out. It was all really drama-free. So Georgia putting together elite classes for the for 2021 and 2022, but for the most part, doing it without drama. And while that may rob you of the occasional entertainment value of the anticipation of who's going to do what when they're going to have, you know, all that take place, it is a stark contrast, honesty compels me to admit, to another program in the SEC who has been nothing but drama over the last few weeks. It started out sort of being drama for the good, but maybe now you can make a case it's maybe not quite as drama for the good anymore. I'm talking about Tennessee, who has been the darling of the mainstream media because of all the commitments they've taken during the coronavirus lockdown. As we said yesterday, they're up to 24 for the 2021 class, and we're not even until June yet. So they've gotten a lot of attention for that. Pruitt's been patted on the back a bunch. Pruitt's been making the rounds doing a bunch of interviews on the basis of this recruiting, even though he can't talk about the players by name. It's all been love and celebration for what's going on in Tennessee. But a couple of those Tennessee pledges recently have kind of made some interesting waves on social media, if you will. First of all, let me start with this. Terrence Lewis is a five-star linebacker out of the state of Florida. He put this out there on Twitter yesterday. He said, what's your dream school? Mine is Oregon. Now, it's kind of weird to see a Tennessee commitment say that. The best I can tell, this entire thing started by Lewis was an entire elaborate kind of troll job. And admittedly, at least one Georgia commit and one Georgia target probably got in on this Twitter conversation amongst these recruits. But kind of the whole point here is Georgia fans just don't worry about that kind of stuff. If a Georgia pledge says his dream school is a school other than Georgia, for the most part, Georgia fans just kind of overlook that and move on because they know that Georgia's a plenty good offer for plenty of people who are there. Same thing for, you know, possible Georgia target who maybe mentioned another school other than Georgia. You're not getting that worried about that. Now, I will say, I got to give Lewis a little bit of credit for this, the five-star Tennessee commit. I think the whole thing actually worked out to be pretty funny. Kamara Wilcox and another Tennessee commit, I saw where he responded to Terrence Lewis's deal, and he said that his dream school was Florida. By my count, I think he's decommitted from Florida twice. The fact that he called Florida his dream school, probably pretty entertaining all the way around. But when it comes to Tennessee guys making some news on social media, that wasn't the only one. Julian Nixon, who I guess ironically is from the same high school that our buddy Connor Riley is from, right? Nixon, the four-star wide receiver, also a Tennessee pledge. This is probably a little bit more serious in terms of the Twitter behavior here, but apparently not feeling the love from Tennessee at the moment. I'm guessing you read into this. He says, I'm just putting this out there. Just because we committed don't mean stop recruiting us, Nixon says. We want to have relationships that we can trust, but there seems to be a misunderstanding. Get it together. So apparently, according to Julian Nixon on Twitter, all is not well when it comes to the recruiting machine that Jeremy Pruitt has supposedly built at Tennessee, which I think is an example of kind of something that we have talked about throughout this entire process, that it is easy to fool the mainstream media on a lot of this kind of stuff. And when Tennessee was knocking down all these commits and getting all these pledges, you had mainstream guy that doesn't follow recruiting very closely jumping out of the woodworks to say, oh, this just proves you. Tennessee's about to be a major player on the scene. They're going to win the SEC East in the next couple of years. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. For those of us who are admittedly not Tennessee fans but follow the subject of recruiting a lot more closely, I think for the most part we saw this for what it was. Jeremy Pruitt manipulating the news cycle but not necessarily changing the fortunes of the talent level for the Tennessee roster all the way around, and now all of a sudden you see a little drama popping up with a couple of those commits that that Tennessee recently took. I guess the overall bottom line is this. Georgia, for the most part, is absent all of that. Georgia has not grabbed as many recruiting headlines during the coronavirus lockdown, but the commitment from Marquise Groves Killebrew, the commitment from Chaz Chambliss, the rumblings and grumblings you hear with other prospects let you know that very quietly Georgia is still working on putting elite classes together for at least the next couple of recruiting cycles and probably a whole lot more. I do believe it's true. There is something weird that happens once your program gets really efficient at how well it recruits. It kind of gets rid of a lot of the drama, which in some cases gets rid of a lot of the entertainment. Yet that ruthless efficiency in bringing elite players year in, year out, I can promise you, that's still plenty a thorn in the side of the programs like Florida and Tennessee and Auburn and all the others that Georgia's competing with. So expectations remain the same for Georgia. A little quiet on the trail maybe the last couple of weeks, but that quiet may only be a calm before the storm, which is eventually another class that ranks at or very near the top for the 2021 cycle. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. And huge thanks to our friends at Meriwether and Tharp for making it all possible here today. We appreciate them being with us, and you as well, whether you're watching on Facebook or YouTube or Twitter or radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or as a podcast wherever you find them. That means the Apple Player, the Google Player, Spotify. A lot of you listen right there on SoundCloud, the worldfamousdognation.com. We are just very, very glad to have you as a part of our program today. And by the way, don't forget to check out my friends at Meriwether and Tharp. Listen, they are your source for Georgia divorce. And this is what that means. That means that they have been through the divorce process alongside their clients thousands and thousands of times before. This is not an organization that's trying to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that and dipping their toe in this and, you know, got a thousand irons in the fire. No, they've chosen to be experts in a given field. And when it comes to people battling the issue of divorce, worried about their finances, worried about their relationship with their children, worried about all the things that can be impacted by the divorce process, you want someone who does this for a living. You want someone who you know, devotes themselves to knowing everything there can be to known about the divorce process. That's why I recommend my friends at Meriwether and Tharp. They're good friends of ours here on Dog Nation Daily. You'll like the experience of doing business with them, and you need to find them online. It's theatlantadivorceteam.com. theatlantadivorceteam.com. They'll get the process started, get your initial consultation going. You can educate yourself about what it's going to be like, and then Meriwether and Tharp can do some really good work for you. They make things whole again. Trust my friends at Meriwether and Tharp for a whole lot more on that. theatlantadivorceteam.com is the website that you go to. All right, I'm going to get Connor Riley here in a couple of minutes. Connor's written some great things at dognation.com. Let me do a couple of things, though, before we get to that. Really good episode of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger last night with Jeff Sintel. Jeff, who has had a string of guests as of late, knocked it out of the park again last night, getting a chance to speak to the most recent 2021 Georgia commit, the linebacker out of Carrollton, Chaz Chambliss. And it's kind of cool to hear Chambliss in his own words describe how he views himself as a player and I guess potentially setting up the way in which Georgia fans will also view him as well. Listen to this comparison that Chambliss makes with a very, very good, really all-time great NFL linebacker. Here is Chaz Chambliss describing his game for UGA fans.
I take pride in my film study and calling out the plays before it happens and looking into other people's eyes like the quarterback and telling them what they're going to do because it just, because you know you're the best on the field when you know what they're doing before they know it.
That's a cool.
It's like I really like I try to build my game around Luke Kuechly and guys like that who aren't necessarily the fastest guys or the most athletic, but the guys who take advantage of what God can't give them.
I jumped the gun and almost interrupted Chaz Chambliss there, but that's a really cool description to hear how he views himself and the idea that he compares himself to Luke Kuechly from the Carolina Panthers, most recently the Panthers anyway. That's a kind of a fun description all the way around there. As far as how he thinks he'll be used at Georgia, he pretty clearly sees a position fit for him. In fact, he even compares himself to some of the guys on the Georgia roster. Here is more of Chaz Chambliss from Before the Hedges presented by Kroger.
I'm going to be outside linebacker at Georgia. You know how they have a primary outside linebacker, which has been Aziz Ojulari and Nolan Smith, those guys who have been outside linebackers who rush the passer and also draw back in coverage and keep containment and do everything.
I think the Ojulari comparison there is pretty interesting because you've heard me say on the show that because he's already so big and seemingly already so strong, I almost wonder if he doesn't have a potential fit in college that's beyond just the outside linebacker position. But it's fair to point out with Ojulari, one of the things that seemingly led to his success a year ago is the fact that he'd also gained some weight there as well. I think Ojulari played last season around 250 pounds or so. That's about 10 pounds heavier than what Chambliss currently is. So pretty clearly you see that extra weight seemingly having helped Ojulari this past season. So the fact that Chambliss compares himself to Ojulari is a pretty interesting one. If you go to the Dog Nation video channels, maybe the Dog Nation YouTube channel may be the best place for this. You can see the full episode of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger from last night and hear the entire interview with Chas Chambliss. I think you'll think it's a really good one. And for more on what George is getting in Marquise Groves-Killebrew, you can get that from Jeff Sintel on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger last night. For now, I want to get ready to sort of shift gears here, bring in Connor Riley on the subject of recruiting. Connor's written a couple of pretty interesting things as of late, including what Georgia has and has not done in an area that should be, you would think, one of the hotbeds for UGA recruiting in the metro Atlanta area. This is good stuff. We'll also touch on some of those freshmen who may be ready to break out for the upcoming season. We'll do it all with Connor Riley. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let me also mention before I say hello to Connor Riley here that later on in our program, Mike Griffith, our buddy, got a chance to sit down yesterday with Georgia Athletic Director Greg McGarity. There are two things in particular that McGarity said during that conversation that I think are really worth us hearing on today's show, maybe exploring in greater detail. What it's going to look like inside Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium this fall. McGarity gives you a little bit of a preview of the ongoing discussions about that. And how about week one, schedule for downtown Atlanta against Virginia? What's the latest on that? We'll hear from Greg McGarity on both those topics before we're done today here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp. Before that, it's Connor Riley. Connor, good to have you with us. We appreciate you spending some time with us, and I hope that you're doing well.
Yep, good to be here. Good to be back in the studio, back at it again.
Yeah, I appreciate all the work you do on a daily basis to help us get this show going. And I also appreciate the stuff that you write at DogNation.com. And let me start it this way, because I want people to read the story for themselves. But you did a really good look at something we talk about all the time here. And we even, I think, somewhat jokingly discussed this last week. I've told you that it's amazing to me that missing on Metro Atlanta players, there have been a couple high-profile examples of that, that it hasn't hurt UGA recruiting more, because when Georgia misses on a Rick Gilbert, it gets a Darnell Washington, or when it misses on a Jaden Hazelwood, it gets George Pickens, and people can cite their own examples of that. But in terms of what really has gone on in that Metro Atlanta area, and I think the Gwinnett County area may be the most interesting because of the fact that of all the metro counties, it's probably the closest to Athens. I thought you had a really good look at that. So for the people who haven't read it yet, to set up the rest of our conversation, would you mind giving us a quick thumbnail sketch of what you wrote?
Yeah, so I went through and looked at sort of every metro Atlanta area recruit, and the metro Atlanta area was, per the definition that I found, Gwinnett, Fulton, Cobb, DeKalb, Henry, Coweta, Fayette, and I think there might be one more that I'm missing. But, you know, I
did you say Clayton County?
Clayton County is the one that I was missing. And Douglas County as well. So those nine counties have produced 118 recruits over the past five recruiting cycles, going back to Kirby Smart's first at Georgia. And, you know, a lot of talk came out of the Barrett Carter commitment of, well, why doesn't Georgia do better in the metro Atlanta area? Specifically, why doesn't Georgia do better in Gwinnett County? Well, in looking at the totality of metro Atlanta, Georgia still has the most commitments from that part of the state in that time, more than Clemson, Tennessee, Auburn, whatever you like. But when looking at Gwinnett County, that county has produced the most blue chip four or five star recruits in that time span. Georgia has gotten just three of those commitments. Yeah. And the last one of those was Warren Erickson back in the 2018 recruiting cycle. Now, of course, MGK commits last night, sort of adding to that total. But I think, you know, it was sort of separating the fact from fiction and how Georgia has recruited the metro Atlanta area in terms of they've still done a very good job. But I think specifically in Gwinnett County, the numbers show that they maybe haven't done as well as you would think that they should.
And the Gwinnett County thing is fascinating to me for a couple of reasons, because of the huge number of FBS prospects that sign out of Gwinnett each and every year, and because of something else I also mentioned just a moment ago, that no matter what part of the metro Atlanta area you're in, if you want to go to Athens, you pretty much have to go through Gwinnett County to get there. That's the access point for 316, the highway. It's the access point to go through 85 to, you know, kind of get to 129. That's what you want to do. It is the entry point from metro Atlanta to the Athens area. So geographically speaking, it would seem like Georgia would have a better advantage in Gwinnett because of how close it is. And yet, for the most part, it kind of hasn't really worked out that way. Do you have an opinion, and maybe there's a number of potential answers here, but do you have an opinion as to why Georgia, when it comes to recruiting, Barrett Carter may be the most high-profile recent example, why Georgia hasn't done better in Gwinnett?
I think we're overstating the importance of, oh, well, they're the closest team, or they're the closest big-time school to a lot of these recruits, therefore they should get them. Because the reality is, you know, I think we lose this a lot of times in recruiting, these guys are good enough to go anywhere they want. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the allure of being close to home, one, isn't all that significant, and two, you know, Barrett Carter, for example, it's an extra 30 minutes to get from his house to get to Sanford Stadium than it is to get to Death Valley and Clemson.
Yep.
And the reality is, and I looked at some of the numbers, you know, Florida has made inroads in this area, LSU, Tennessee, Auburn, Alabama as well. So many schools recruit the metro Atlanta area and rely on having at least two or three or four guys from this area every year that it's really, I think, impossible to expect one school to sort of just clean up, because there are so many different options that aren't all that far away.
Your point on the closeness of Clemson, I think, is a good one, because as someone who lived in Gwinnett County for a long time, including very close to the area where Barrett Carter lives now, and someone who grew up in Hall County, going to games in Athens on a Saturday and driving up 85 to get there, I saw no shortage of Clemson flags on that same highway, as you said, taking a very similar course to get to Clemson, which is really not that much farther away.
Right, and I think Clemson, you know, Mickey Conn is the safeties coach there at Clemson. He's sort of the area recruiter for that area of the state, and he was a very, very good high school coach at Grayson High School for a long time, and obviously still has a lot of connections in that area. Clemson right now has four commits in the metro Atlanta area for the 2021 recruiting cycle, and it's clear that they are going to continue to target this area and have made serious inroads in this part of the state.
Let me ask you one more point about this, and this is true for, I guess, all the metro Atlanta kids, and actually this particular point may be true for statewide, but in this particular instance, we're talking metro Atlanta. Do you think Georgia has extra pressure because of the fact it is the in-state school to make sure it gets its in-state evaluations right? In other words, this notion of, well, we kind of think we like this player, so we'll try to get his attention earlier, only to maybe see that evaluation change over the course of a career. If a school like Georgia does that with a metro Atlanta player and an in-state or an in-state kid, there's the potential of hurt feelings maybe somewhere along the way. Do you think the risk of hurting feelings potentially impacts the way that Georgia recruits the state, and in this case, the metro Atlanta area?
Yeah, to that extent, I would certainly see that. You can look at the, I believe, the 2019 recruiting cycle. There were two players in the metro Atlanta area, Jalen Perry out of Dacula and J.D. Bertrand out of Blessed Trinity, guys who at one point were in that class, and Georgia sort of went in a different direction at both of those positions, and I certainly think that factors into it. And two, Kirby Smart is very big on making evaluations into the senior season, and obviously now with recruiting, everything is sort of sped up, and I think Kirby Smart wanted to take more time to see more evaluations and sort of see what these guys look like as high school seniors as they get closer to their freshman year. I do think that that sort of hinders the advantage they might have of being the in-state program.
With that in mind, there was some message board chatter yesterday about the fact that MGK had to transfer from Grayson to Brookwood before he could commit to Georgia.
Grayson is one of the schools that has they've produced a lot of recruits and a lot of high-profile recruits, and almost none of them have gone to Georgia.
All right, so do you agree with this is changing the subject. Do you agree with the premise that I kind of addressed earlier in the show, that as Georgia gets more efficient from a recruiting standpoint, you know, very little doubt that it's putting together an elite 2021 class, it kind of produces less drama than some of its recruiting rivals and some of the fun and crazy stuff you see going on, you know, from time to time, and maybe even some of the mainstream media attention just doesn't come Georgia's way because its efficiency at recruiting has led it to kind of recruit at kind of a methodical pace. And, you know, about every month or so, another name gets added. In this case, it's 2022 from yesterday after Chambliss the day before, that there's a certain efficiency to Georgia to recruiting now that's made it a little bit more drama-free, which I think is a good thing overall, but maybe at times a little less entertaining than some of the other schools by comparison?
Yeah, I think you look at a school like Clemson and the way they go about their business, and it's very professional. You know, we want you in the class early. We want you done. Georgia, traditionally, they've been, if you want to wait on your commitment, that's okay with us. Going back to, you know, Kirby Smart wanting to have more of that evaluation process. But, you know, Georgia's at a point now every year where it's expected to sign a top recruiting class, and it's not going to do like what Tennessee, I think, did, or what Florida does, where they take a ton of early commitments in the hope that a lot of those guys end up panning out and continue to get better over the course of their high school careers and continue to develop athletically, when I think Kirby Smart now knows that's not going to be the case for everyone. That's why I think you see them, you know, waiting a little bit longer to take those commits. You know, a lot of schools already have a number of 2022 commits, but Georgia just got their first one yesterday in MGK. So I do think the whole slow playing and, you know, waiting to get a more complete evaluation of our prospect is why Georgia tends to go at a more slower, methodical pace. And it does set up, though, usually for a fast finish around December.
I want to shift gears here because I want to talk about some of these freshmen you've written about at DogNation.com in terms of the guys that can contribute right away. I think you're right to put Kendall Milton on your list for that reason. We've seen freshman running backs do well at Georgia before. DeAndre Swift as a freshman probably has a much bigger role if it's not for Nick Chubb and Sony Michelle. I get the sense there's room for a freshman running back at Georgia this year, with all due respect to James Cook or Kenny McIntosh. My projection is that Kendall Milton will be the second leading rusher on this team behind Zamir White. It seems like you think there's plenty of room for Kendall to thrive this year as well.
Yeah, I think, one, even the uncertainty at who that, you know, star starting running back is going to be, I think we all expect it to be Zamir White, but what that looks like from a workload perspective from him, there are a lot of questions at that running back spot. And, you know, I think with how weird this offseason is going to be and how truncated and how, you know, potentially different everything is going to be from a strength and weight perspective, I think the guys who are more physically ready to come in and play right away are going to have, as freshmen, a more distinct advantage than, say, someone like a Broderick Jones, who we all know needs to, you know, put on some more weight when he gets to college. So, and Kendall Milton is one of the most physically impressive recruits I think Georgia has landed, just from how filled out he already is. And he, you know, you saw the gains he made in the weight room early on in his time at Georgia. I expect, you know, the physical aspect of college football, of the SEC, to not be an issue for Mr. Milton.
You mentioned both Jermaine Burton and Marcus Roseme. Is this an either-or situation, or do you think they can both thrive?
I think it's probably going to be an either-or situation. I think the only way it's both is maybe if Dominic Blaylock does not come back 100% and isn't totally healthy and ready to go to start the season. I do think Georgia is going to need one of those freshman wide receivers to sort of have, you know, not a George Pickens-like year, but maybe closer to what Blaylock had a season ago, where it's around 400 yards, 25 catches, and a few touchdowns here or there. I think that's going to make everything easier for the rest of the offense.
Another name on your list is Jalen Carter. I totally agree about this. I don't think that Carter is quite the same level of prospect that Trayvon Walker was, but in terms of how Georgia used Walker last season, I think that's a blueprint for Carter. That's a guy I could see playing over the football on third down. That's a guy that I could see, you know, getting a chance to kind of, you know, be on the outside of that Georgia defensive line from time to time. And just given the fact that Georgia plays a lot of players defensively, and given what Jalen Carter already looks like prior to showing up at Georgia, hard to imagine they don't find a spot for him this season.
Yeah, I think from a physical standpoint, he's farther along than Trayvon Walker was at this time a year ago, but I think Walker has more of that freaky athleticism that you perhaps look for at the defensive line. But to your point, I made this in the story, Georgia plays so many guys on the defensive line, and it just doesn't have too many players who look like and play like Jalen Carter, that, you know, they're not going to ask him to be Quinnen Williams or even, you know, a Jordan Davis. But there'll be, a role for him to play and fill this season as a freshman.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I guess the one of the elite recruits that Georgia signed that I'm just not quite as sure about is Keely Ringo. You know, for me, this secondary is so deep, and I'll give you a specific example of this. I don't think this is a name that you mentioned in your story, although maybe I just missed it. When you look at Tyson Campbell's injury a year ago, the door that opened for DJ Daniel to be on the field a lot. Mm-hmm. And so now he's played, and obviously Tyreek Stevenson is a very elite prospect, not quite as highly rated as Keely Ringo, but pretty highly rated all the way around. I think Campbell was very good when healthy a year ago, and obviously Eric Stokes is pretty well established. I really like Georgia's cornerback situation before you even get to Keely Ringo. This is not a knock on Ringo. This is not a doubt of what I think he'll be in his career. But if I had to pick one of the elite signees that maybe has a harder time getting on the field just because of the depth of what's going on, Ringo may be one of the guys that I would gravitate towards of, boy, I don't know how you crack that lineup with the four guys that I just mentioned.
I think you're sleeping a little bit on Kelee Ringo, which okay. I think is impossible to say, just given that he is a five-star prospect. But you look at the measurables that he has, the physical abilities, the track speed, the size. He is literally the best defensive back recruit that Kirby Smart has ever signed. And he has shown, you know, last year that defensive back room was still crowded as it was, and he found ways to get Tyreek Stevenson on the field in a role that best suited the Georgia defense. I think Kirby Smart has shown, whether it be Tyson Campbell, even through Richard LeCount out there as a true freshman to start that 2017 campaign, if you're good enough, and I think Ringo has the potential to be that, he is going to find a role for you on this Georgia team. And as we saw last year, you know, injuries do happen. And I think in this sort of situation that could be even more, there could be even more just because of the lack of preparedness that comes from a truncated offseason. So I think, you know, while you are certainly right, it is going to be, of the guys I mentioned, it is going to be tougher for Ringo to get on the field. I do think that he has the sort of physical readiness to, if a guy, you know, isn't ready to go, isn't 100% to start the season, he has the potential to be just that and step right in.
You can read all this from Connor Riley at DogNation.com, kind of looking at, in addition to what we're talking about here, some of the guys that will and maybe will not get a chance to really explode during their freshman season. That's good stuff at DogNation.com. Let me squeeze in one final thing before we let you go. When there is basketball news, at least when I'm trying to hit on it, Georgia getting another graduate transfer, this time P.J. Horn out of Virginia Tech. Connor, are you on the same page with me on this? There's seemingly something to like about Horn. You know, he seems to be a pretty good shooter for a taller guy, 6'7". But Georgia's ultimate need in terms of adding to its front court, you know, controlling the glass a little bit better, it seems like through the transfer market, even though I like the guys they've brought in, I don't know how well they've addressed their huge, glaring front court need thus far in the offseason.
Yeah, and Rayshon Hammonds goes to the NBA draft, and yes, they have some young players that are going to continue to get better, but going into year three with Tom Crean, there are still a lot of questions and I think concerns about the direction of this program and what they might be able to do in this third season, because you can't just keep saying, oh, we're just rebuilding forever and we're going to keep accumulating talent. The reason you bring in grad transfers is to help you win mm-hmm. more now. Yeah. So if you're having to consistently do that, that does make me worry about the long-term, I think, trajectory of the program.
Yeah, listen, I think every guy they've brought in thus far, you can certainly imagine how they can contribute, but it seems like they've got a pretty big need in terms of what's happening there in the front court and what they're doing to prevent offensive rebounds. I'm not quite so sure that's been solved thus far. Connor, really good stuff. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. We'll look forward to reading more from you at DogNation.com, and I guess we'll see you this afternoon as part of our Cover 4 broadcast. I'll be back at home for that, but it'll be our Dog Nation video channels nonetheless.
Yep, as always, a great time.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, so really good stuff from Connor Riley. And as I said before, we will get more from him this afternoon when it comes to the Cover 4 broadcast. And in a few minutes here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, we are going to hear from Georgia Athletic Director Greg McGarity, who was with Mike Griffith on the Dog Nation video channels yesterday. In particular, the two things I want to hit up with McGarity. It's his thoughts on kind of how many fans you can expect to see during Sanford Stadium this fall. Spoiler alert, he's not going to be too specific on that, but it's still useful information nonetheless, and a little bit of a preview of what may go down with Georgia and Virginia there as well. All right, let me hit a couple of things here just for a moment. Let me start with this. So as expected, the NCAA has extended the recruiting dead period through July 31st. And I mentioned this, I think, with Jeff Sintel when he was with us on a show a couple of weeks ago. Even though there are a couple of examples you can point to, or maybe the lack of visits, opportunity for visits for Georgia, you know, this would have been like scavenger hunt time, things like that, one of those, you know, great visit weekends for Georgia around this time. Even though that's not currently taking place, I'm kind of okay with the NCAA recruiting moratorium at the moment. I'm kind of okay with that because I just think, given the fact there was no spring practice and all the weird stuff that's going on there, just given all of that, I think that getting ready for the upcoming season as it is a pretty big meal to eat right now. That's, you got plenty to take care of just by thinking that. So I'm sort of okay with that all the way around. I think what you need to be able to do if you're a program like Georgia is you've got to be able to do one of two things. While there is a no-visit rule in place, I think you've got to be good at convincing certain players not to commit anywhere, or the ones that do commit, I think you've got to at least be good at getting them to keep their recruitment open, right? You've got to at least be able to convince them to do that. And as long as you can keep that door open, you have a chance to navigate that later on. For the most part, if you look at the top 10 recruiting rankings every single year, they don't change very much. There's a little bit of fluctuation from year to year. Certainly under Kirby Smart, Georgia's recruited better than it has before, but Georgia, for the most part, was going to show up in the top 10 a lot of these years. My point in saying this is that when it comes to what, you know, programs are good recruiters, which coaches are good recruiters, that doesn't really change from year to year. And in the midst of the weirdest year we've ever seen around college football because of the coronavirus and the lockdowns and everything that's been going on here, because of all of that, that's not going to change the ultimate end results. I think good recruiting programs will be made better because of this. I think mediocre recruiting programs will be made worse. Individual coaches who are really good at forging relationships, that ability to do that, it's going to really come to the forefront. It's going to really shine. The coaches who are a little bit more awkward, whose conversations are a little bit more forced, as Kirby Smart's warned us about a few different times when he's spoken to the media, if you're one of these programs or one of these coaches that's constantly calling these kids now because you got nothing else to do, at a certain point in time you turn the recruits off for that. I think that Georgia and Kirby Smart and his staff are probably pretty good at navigating those waters all the way around. I mean, you can cite some players who maybe because they haven't really visited Georgia as of late, you know, maybe that's hurting the Georgia relationship a little bit. Dallas Turner comes to mind maybe for that, the four-star pass rusher. But that said, I think getting ready for the season right now is plenty to do between now and July 31st. And I think as long as you can convince some guys to keep the door open, you'll have a chance to flurry, finish strong with these guys late. I'm not worried about that really all the way around. Let me mention another story here. I saw where Ed Orgeron was kind of bragging about some of the defensive talent he has in place right now. I guess the word is LSU this year kind of switching over to a 4-3. What I think is really interesting here is there are a few SEC storylines that I don't think we've talked about very much, and this is one of them. It's the presence of Bo Pelini as LSU defensive coordinator. One of the things I think we would all agree about Orgeron is Orgeron has proven to be a really good hire of assistants. Hirer is what I'm trying to say, someone who hires. He's proven to be really good at that. Now, there are some naysayers, some critics of Orgeron who say that's kind of all he's good at, that he's one of these, you know, CEO-style guys that lets the other smart guys do the work. I don't believe that's true. I've told you before, I think Orgeron's probably a smarter coach than he's given credit for because of, you know, he kind of comes across as a little bit of a mascot from time to time, but behind the scenes, I think he's more plugged in than people realize. But his ability to make good hires is going to be put to the test. Remember, this is also a guy that's got a pretty bad hire on his resume since being LSU head coach. Hiring Matt Canada as offensive coordinator was a total disaster. Got so bad that he and Canada were so much not on the same page that the athletic director had to come sit in on their meetings because they couldn't be in the same room together. Now, Canada is also, for the most part, out of coaching, so it certainly seems like Canada was more to blame for that than Orgeron was. But it's not like Orgeron's history of making hires at LSU has been perfect thus far. He had to make two pretty high-profile hires during this offseason. He had to replace Joe Brady, who became Panthers offensive coordinator. He's bringing Scott Linehan, former NFL head coach. He had to replace Dave Aranda, his very well-paid defensive coordinator, who has now gone on to be Baylor head coach. Bo Pelini's obviously a name that LSU fans know because he was there as LSU defensive coordinator before he became the Nebraska head coach. What we think about Orgeron is going to evolve this season because of the hires he had to make. It's not as talented a roster as it was a year ago. I sort of think LSU takes a little bit of a step back, but how he did in terms of hiring Pelini, the impact that Pelini can make, and hiring Linehan to replace Brady, the impact that he can make, that'll go a long way towards determining just how competitive the SEC West is going to be. I was going to do another story, but I'm kind of running late. Let me make that your SEC through for now because I want to look at this Greg McGarrity stuff. So McGarrity on with Mike Griffith yesterday. Go to the Dog Nation YouTube page. You can see the full interview. But there's a couple things in particular I wanted to hit with you. I've said before that while I feel like I have known for a while that games are going to be played, including on week one, I've been pretty steadfast in my prediction on that. The one thing I'm not quite as comfortable making predictions about, how many fans will be in the stands, including Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium. Greg McGarrity did mention yesterday that they're obviously, you know, hopeful for a wide-ranging number of options, including the potential of maybe the entire stadium being full. Here's what Greg McGarrity told Mike Griffith on that yesterday.
Well, we've got a number of plans. You know, when we have to make a decision, we will have to make it based on the definition of mass gatherings. And that could change between now. You know, it's way too early to make the decision here in May. I mean, we're not playing until September. So it's our hope that we can operate a stadium at full capacity. Is that realistic? You know, time will tell, but certainly we don't want to talk about these different variations and have people panicked and upset, or am I in, am I out? It's just not worth it right now. I think everyone has to exercise a level of patience. We certainly are. And at some point in time, we'll come out with our information and decisions that we will make. But, you know, we haven't begun to really talk about those except internally. And really, I haven't mentioned anything to President Moorhead or anyone else. Josh Brooks has taken the lead on that effort for us, and he's coordinated with a small group, internal group, on how to deal with that. But at some point in time, we'll talk about that, but we want to be sure when we do it, it's accurate, it doesn't change, and it doesn't create any confusion among our fan base.
A couple things for me on that. First of all, as someone who wants fans in the stands, I'd be willing to see the games play without fans if it means getting the games take place on time. I'd be willing to do it without fans, but I want fans there. The fact that McGarrity's at least keeping the door open to having something close to a full stadium, boy, I take that as some pretty good news, and you'd love to see the world fall into place where that's even a possibility. I think the South Carolina Athletic Director, Ray Tanner, also said something similarly optimistic yesterday there as well, that that's at least going to be considered as a possibility. I think that's what Tanner said anyway. So you like the idea of that. However, if it's something less than a full house, the fact that McGarrity's not willing to commit to that one way or another yet also makes total sense. It is still very early before the start of the season. There's no reason why that should have to be announced right now. And obviously, the other part of this is, which he kind of addresses, the coming storm of anger about who does get to be in and who doesn't get to be in. If you're talking about, you know, the most aggressive kind of social distancing, which might only put, like, say, 15,000 people in the stands, I don't want to be Josh Brooks. I don't want to be Greg McGarrity. I don't want to be anybody that has to be in charge making a decision like that. I've said that before. I want to avoid that all the way around. So nice to hear at least a little bit of optimism about how many people you might have, but also important to hear the other contingencies that are being discussed. How about week one, Mercedes-Benz Stadium against Virginia? McGarrity with Mike Griffith yesterday on the Dog Nation video channels also mentioned some possibilities for how that game might come together. Here's the UJ Athletic Director again.
We're all planning to play the game, you know, but what will be the mass gathering definition in Mercedes-Benz Stadium? You know, when that is defined, then the schools will have to react to that. And we just don't know right now, but all plans are conduct the game with a full house, hopefully. If not, we'll make adjustments and go from there. And perhaps they'll have to open up the roof of the Mercedes-Benz Stadium to provide a little bit more air circulation, things of those lines. But it'll be a good collaborative discussion, and whatever happens, happens, and we'll roll with the decisions as they're made.
It's worth pointing out in terms of the collaborative discussion there that obviously goes on with Gary Stokin, who's the president of the Atlanta Sports Council, and a part of that committee that you know, puts on the Chick-fil-A kickoff. Also, the Virginia Athletic Director is Carla Williams, who was a longtime UGA staffer there as well. So pretty open lines of communication there. Interesting to hear about the possibility of, hey, maybe the venue's made safer by making it more of an open-air thing. We've heard on the news some people saying that, you know, it's safer to be outdoors. That's why you see some restaurants adding the outdoor tables. Maybe opening the roof makes things a little safer at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I'm not an expert enough to know that one way or another, but just interesting to hear all the various contingencies put in place. Honestly, we don't have all the answers yet, and we got to keep, you know, crossing our fingers that we keep on a trajectory of good news to even get to this point. But the fact that this is where the conversation is now, game likely to take place, trying to decide how many fans are going to be there, man, compared to where we thought we were a couple of months ago, that is good stuff all the way around. Something else that's good, how about Gator Hater Updater? 1,307 days. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.